Here we are in London, and we are ready for the first part of our sharing together of life's values, beautiful, positive values. All of us have values that we live by, and we gain these values from our parents and from our peers and from our teachers and from our world. And as we gained these values, we thought that they were the most important thing for us to follow. Except that every time we have a value, it's a judgment. And because it's a judgment, it is not pure, and it is not what we really want to do. Now, if I say to you, in this house, we mind and behave and do what our mother and father ask us to do. In this house, we put our clothes away. In this house, we help with the meals. We do things around the house. We do things not because we want to get our little earning every week, you know, but because we want to be helpful, because it's our family. This is our house. And in this house, that's what we do. Now, some families don't say that, you know. Some families don't say that this is our house and that's how we act. They just get angry at the kids because they don't put their clothes away. And they get angry at everything because it doesn't happen the way they think it should. And they forget one thing. They forget one thing. Children, you, Ibube, children want to be taught and trained in the things that are important in life. Now, how do you train somebody in what's important in life? Well, the best way to do that is by how you handle things in relation to each other. How do you respect your neighbor? How do you respect your friend? How do you respect your mother and father? How do you respect them? Do you respect them with the idea that you're going to respect them because you want to get something from them? And usually that's what it is. Or do you respect them because you learned how to respect your father by seeing how your mother responds to your father and how the other children in the family do as he asks and are very obedient? And you say, well, what's that got to do with values? Well, a value is something that you believe in. And so many people really have nothing to believe in. They watch television, and when they watch television, they see unhappy things taking place on television, either in the videos, in the movies, or in the news. You know, it's in all segments, it seems. And what did their parents teach them to do when they saw something naughty going on in the world? What did the parents teach them to do? The parents taught them to say, oh, that's bad, that's wrong. Those people should be thrown away. Those people should be stopped. They should be shot. They should be killed. You know, they should be put in prison. And what is that a kind of value we want? Or is the kind of value we want the kind of value that we learn from our intuitive self? You see, Chioma has been raising, Chioma has been raising Ibube. I was thinking Ibube's been raising Chioma. Chioma's been raising Ibube. And Chioma, by her example, shows him what is the proper thing to do. Now, that he doesn't yet always follow it doesn't make her change. She continually acts like a lady. She continually acts respecting herself and respecting her world, and she continually reacts respecting her child. But, you see, then he's going to learn as he grows up that respect is terribly important. Whether it's respect for his family or his grandparents or his aunt or his uncle or his father or mother or whoever it is, he's going to learn that. Now, respect is really one of the great values of life. But we don't think of respect as a value. We think of respect as just something that's the proper thing to do. You know, when the Queen of England walks out the front door, everybody who sees her instantly has respect for her. Now, is that true? And it's not true. That's not true. Everyone who sees her has instantly a respect for the position she holds, for the manner in which she conducts herself. She conducts herself as a queen. Now, if she would conduct herself as a mother of her children, letting them do anything they wanted to do, you wouldn't have too much respect for her. When children act up and don't do the things that their parents want them to do, you don't get after the children, you get after the parents. Now, there's a wonderful series of videos on the National Geographic Channel in the United States, and it's called The Dog Whisperer. Now, the dog whisperer is a very interesting Mexican fellow. He loves animals and he loves dogs. And people all over the world call him to come and help them with their dog because their dog is not acting properly. And so he goes to visit them. And as he goes to visit them, he finds that the dogs are biting people and growling and jumping around and doing a lot of things that are not very happy for the family. And when they take them for a walk, the dog drags them along. You've seen people do that. When they take their dog for a walk, the dog drags them because they're out behind on the leash. Well, he goes to these people and he says, "Now, what would you like to do? What disturbs you?" And he says, "Well, I can't walk the dog without him pulling me. The dog jumps up on me all the time. The dog bites at my friends when they come to the house, because I don't know why." And so Caesar, who is our fellow, who is the trainer, the whisperer, he said, "All right, let's just figure out one thing. Let's figure out who is the alpha, who is the leader, who is the person in the dog's life that controls the dog's experience. Well, it's you, the man and the woman. It's how you control your dog." And Caesar's user said, "How long has your dog been acting up like this?" "Well, we've had him 5 years, and he's been acting up all the time." And Caesar says, "Well, here's the reason. It's not that you're bad people. It's not that you're bad trainers or anything like that. It's just that you forgot one thing. The dog is not a human being. The dog is a dog. And the dog wants to be treated like a dog. He wants to be treated like he is a member of the pack, and you are the leader of that pack. You, I, whoever is in that house, we're the alpha people in that house. We're the leader of the pack. And the dog wants to find out what his limits are. You know how children do? They want to find out how far they can go with doing things. Well, that's what the dog is doing." And so Caesar, who is the dog whisperer, he goes up to the dog, and the dog, it's his house. And Caesar walks in there with his chin up, his chest out, shoulders back, and he said mentally, "This is my house. I'm now claiming this house." And the dog looks at him and says, "How dare you do that? How dare you do that? This is our house, my house, you know." And so Caesar looks at him and says, with his hand, just waving him away, he says, "Back up." And the dog backs up. He has taken the upper hand. Then he says to the dog, "I am the master." And then he says to the dog, "This is my space. You don't cross over that line." I mean, not out loud. He says it, with his hand and mentally. And the dog doesn't cross over the line. Then he says to the dog, he says to the people, "One of the most important things to do in training a dog is to take him for a walk. Every day, 3/4 of an hour to an hour, take him for a walk." And they say, "Well, he drags me, he yanks my arm out of the socket and everything. It's terrible." Caesar says, "Okay, come on now, watch." So they go to the front door of the house, and the dogs are jumping up and down, eager to go out for a walk. And Caesar says, with his finger down, and the dog settles down. And then Caesar says, this way with his finger, back, and the dog stays. And then Caesar walks out the door with a leash on the dog, and then he says, "Come." And then the dog tries to go ahead of him, and he won't let him. He keeps him right by his knee, and he walks out the front door, and when the dog looks around saying, "Oh boy, I've got to protect my master from this big world out here. He takes the leash and he pulls the dog's head toward him. And the dog realizes he has only one thing to do, and that is to follow what his master tells him to do. Now, after 10 or 15 minutes, the dog is docile, the dog is submissive, the dog is totally cooperative. Now, I don't say that we should train our children that way, but I say the technique is not unlike how we can train our children. We train our children by telling them what we expect of them and then having them do it. And a lot of parents think it's so terrible to have a child on a harness. You put a harness on the child so he doesn't run into traffic. And actually, if you did that for a few times and said to the kids, now, you walk with me, you walk with me, you stay with me, then you can take the harness off and they'll stay with you. Because they have learned that is what you expect and that's what they must do. And they're not being deprived of anything as they do that, because they just accept it. Now, we are so afraid to hurt our dog. We're so afraid to make the dog unhappy. The dog is happiest when the dog is under control. A child is happiest when he's under control. And as we tell the child, and as we train the child to do as we ask them to do, they are the happiest as can ever be. Now, Chrissy, what about you? When you train yourself, are you happy?
Yes.
When you train yourself and you say to yourself, what a beautiful day, and you train yourself to every single morning wake up and say what a beautiful day, whether it's raining or snowing or sleeting or hailing or the sun is shining, it doesn't matter. Or if it's so early the sun's not shining yet, that's okay, it's a wonderful day. You look up at the stars. You train yourself to do that every day, and after a while, you will always look out and you'll see a wonderful day. After a while, you'll always look out and you'll see everything in harmony and peace. After a while, everybody around you will be harmonious and loving, because you have that as your nature by training yourself to do that every moment of your life. Now, we train dogs, we train cats, we train children, and we train our husbands and our wives. But that's not really what we train, is it? What do we train? I'm sorry?
Our attitude.
We train our own attitudes. We don't train somebody else's attitude. We train our attitude. Now, what is my attitude about Ibu Bay here? Ibu Bay is a very energized child here. He's just full of energy, and he wants to get away from me as hard as he can, you know. He's just so full of energy, but he's a very loving, wonderful child. And if I were to really do the dog whisperer on him, he would just relax and be very calm and very peaceful and very wonderful. But is that what he wants done? Yes. Is that what his mother wants done? Not really. She enjoys him just the way he is. And then the day will come when she would enjoy him as being subservient, obedient child. And a subservient, obedient child is not necessarily a nothing kid, you know what I mean? It is not necessarily a kid who is just sort of an unhappy child. We have worked with a lot of children and a lot of dogs and a lot of people, and every time we are very consistent with them in making sure that they recognize what the program is and what the rules are, they just fall right into the program. Now, Ibu Bay, would you like to sit next to me here? I would love to have you sit next to me. Now, Ibu Bay, hey, precious, hey, Ibu Bay, look at me. Ibu Bay, look at me. I love you. Now, Ibu Bay, Ibu Bay, would you like to sit real quietly next to me and just let me share some ideas, and maybe you listen to the ideas too? You think that would be a good idea? I think that would be a wonderful idea. But you're such a cool guy. You're such a cool guy. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are. Now, We always take control of the situation, not by beating the hell out of them, which sometimes parents want to do because the kids are so obstreperous, they're just so upsetting. But the more gentle we are, but firm, the more the kid will quickly acquiesce and follow what we suggest without being unhappy with us or with himself. But it's a wonderful thing. And Ibu Bing, you are a wonderful boy. You are a very wonderful boy. Did you know that? Ibu Bing, did you know that? Hey, did you know that? Did you know that? Yes, you are. Now, this is part of our own training of our own values in our life. And you sometimes think that I'm talking far afield from the word values, but values are our personal integrity and quality. Now, here in England, you have had a woman who was an example to you of a value. She was disliked by her husband. She was disliked by her mother-in-law. She was discredited in every possible way. And what did she do? She became the princess of England, whom everyone in England loved and worshipped. And they really only knew about her problems and her good stuff. But any woman on earth would love to be Princess Di. They'd love to have the respect and love that she garnered from the people. Now, how did she get it? She got it not by doing things to get to be loved. She got it by sincere integrity in herself, loving whatever she did. Now, people say, well, she did this wrong and she did that wrong. Hey, why are we here? Because we're perfect? Or because we can be perfect? If she had no faults, you'd say, it's easy for her to be that way. But she had her faults, and like we all have our faults, but she didn't let those faults disturb her. She stood up for what she believed of herself, and the world stood up and said, wow, what a woman. And even when her car crashed and she was killed and those sort of things, you still say, wow, what a woman, you know. You see, Bill Clinton was president of the United States, and he was a good man, and his other party tried to discredit him, and they couldn't discredit him. So they paid this woman to say that he did things with her that was not very nice, and she publicly did those things, and the other party was ready to have the Congress kick him out, impeach him, you know, dump him. And you know what they did? They went to the people, and the people said, no, no, we believe in him. If he did something wrong, forgive him. If he didn't do something wrong, then he certainly shouldn't have be impeached. But you see, the world oftentimes really knows who is beautiful and who is good. And I look at the Queen of England right now, and I see how she raised the children of Princess Di, and how she has allowed them to do one thing that they should never do. She has allowed them to forget what their values are. Now, who are these two boys I'm talking about? Do you know their name?
Harry and Harry. Harry and Harry.
Loud.
Harry and Harry. Harry.
Harry?
And Harry. Harry.
Harry and who? Who?
Harry and
Will.
Will.
Will and Harry. Yeah. And what did the Queen of England allow these boys to do? These are princelings. They're being trained to be the kings of England, one or the other, or both, you know. They're being trained to have the highest quality of morals, the highest qualities of integrity, the highest qualities of living, these things. And you can't get them in the bar and the dance hall. You can't get them when you go around with what? The word commoners. If you're going to be a prince, you cannot play with the commoners. You have to play with other princes. And there are not too many of them around. But you have to you have to be raised in the purity of right action, truth, and honesty, and integrity, all that stuff, all the time. And if the queen thinks she's so darn good that she can allow them not to do that, and if they think they can get away with not doing it by running out, she should say, come back in your room, and you're a prince. If you don't want to be a prince, then resign and go be a people, you know. But if you want to be a prince, and they want to be a prince. Oh, they want to be a prince. So if you want to be a prince, this is what a prince is. Now, you see, a mother, does she say that to her child? No. She doesn't say, in our house, this is how we act and this is how we live. This is how we respect our brothers and sisters. This is how we kiss our Aunt Chrissy, you know, when she comes in the house, even though we don't want to kiss Aunt Chrissy. We want to kiss somebody, you know. You know what I mean? And when that happens, it's silly. But how do you raise a prince? How do you raise God? How do you raise the divine in anybody? You raise them by helping them to be aware of the values that go along with being divine. Now, if you want to be human, then that's fine. You can go and do all those things that a human being does. A human being is unhappy, a human being picks on other people, a human being say, she made me do it, or she's my problem, not me, you know, somebody outside of me is my problem. And you see, those are not the values of a divine being. And those are not the values that we want to learn and that we want to put into our life. And if we want to have them in our life, then we have to really go to work at it. Yeah, how about that? We have to really go to work at it. Now, how are you going to go to work at it? Now, just let's say your name is, what's the Queen of England's name?
Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth? How many years has she been honking around as a queen? Quite a few. She's 81 years old now, and she's doing a great job. But does she forget? Did she feel sorry for herself when the kids did the wrong thing, or when her sons did the wrong thing, when some of them became homosexual and some of them became bisexual and heterosexual, and some of them had girlfriends and boyfriends and all this sort of stuff? Did she become upset? Yeah. But if she had raised her children as the princes that they were, they would have never had those experiences. They would not have dwelt with the common. Because what is it? Our society today says virtually everything is okay. And because the society says everything is okay, then whatever the people do is okay. Now, is that right? No. What is it that we should learn to do? We should learn to be our highest and best. Learn to follow whatever is our ideal. Now, when Princess Di was raising her family, what sort of things did she do with her children? She taught them these values, didn't she? You know why she taught it to them? Because she had to learn them herself. She came from an ordinary home as a commoner, and coming from an ordinary home, she had to transform and transfer her thinking from an ordinary commoner into a princess. And she did it. She did it. But the prince, he was a commoner, and he still is a commoner. And though the people think highly of him, they only think highly of him because they forgive him for whatever nonsense that he did, you know. And that's okay. So, what do you do? Now, just for instance, if you were Queen Elizabeth, how would you handle yourself? How would you allow your children to play with other children who are not princes and princesses, you know? How would you do that? Would you do that? Would you have the strength to do that? You would say, well, my children, they have to have friends. They have to have growing experiences. They have to go out and participate with other children. No, they don't.
Grandpa.
No, they don't. Well, it makes them well-rounded. You're not raising a well-rounded child. You're raising a prince. You're raising a divine being. Now, are we really interested in raising divine beings and ourselves being divine beings? I don't think so. And the reason I say I don't think so is that we feel, well, gee, you know, they don't have any fun. You know, they don't have any fun. Well, what do we learn to consider as fun? we learn to consider as fun those things that are what the common person likes to do, which are not really what is our divine nature to do. So we want to learn what the divine nature does and how the divine nature responds. And as we learn how the divine nature responds, then it is. Now, I was in Switzerland yesterday, and with some of my students in Switzerland, they asked me this question. Herb, after we find bliss, then what? After we find bliss, then what? Well, first find bliss, you know? First find bliss. Well, then what? I said, well, if you want to take the story of the Buddha, remember the Buddha? The Buddha found bliss, didn't he? He went under the boa tree and he meditated, and as he meditated under the boa tree, it came to him, hey, this is what came to him. He says, it's nonsense to go about flagellating my body and telling myself that I'm no good. It's nonsense to not eat. It's nonsense to not drink and have fun and have a good life. And so he came out from his bliss experience, which he could have remained in, and he came back to his buddies and he said, hey guys, come on, let's party. And they said, what? He said, yeah. And they said, well, that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to flagellate ourselves. We're supposed to bow and pray and do all that sort of stuff. He said, no, we're supposed to be ourselves and have fun. We're supposed to have a wonderful time in living our life. And as we have a wonderful time in living our life, then we are peaceful and harmonious, and everything is in wonderful, you know, happiness. And so, if you ever read the story of the Buddha, he did not write anything. Remember? He didn't write it. Jesus the Christ didn't write anything. It's the people who wrote 50 years after his transition that they wrote all about him. Well, the Buddha did this one thing with his people. They would come to him as he was sitting there meditating, enjoying himself, and they would say, how do we meditate? How do we do it? And what did he do? Remember? He held up a flower and he said, look at this rose and contemplate the rose. Well, how long? Until you feel absolutely at bliss, absolutely in peace. Relax. Relax. You see, we would like to have peace on earth, but we want peace on earth with activity. Because if there's peace on earth, then it gets kind of boring. It gets kind of boring because there's not activity. But if we really thought about it, wouldn't it be something if all the nations of the world could enjoy this opportunity of living with peace on earth, with no longer war? We have plenty of money. The abundance is around us. This may be called a recession, but it's a man-made recession. It's not a God-made recession, or it's not a recession that is made by society, or not society, but it's an economical thing. The money is still there. It's still there. When Obama became president of the United States, what did he do? The first thing he did was take all the money that was there and distribute it among the people because they had given it. He wanted to share that wealth with them. And how is he going to run the country? Easy. He's got money flowing from every possible way. And it really works great. It really works great. Because he's doing just wonderful things. And people believe in him. Now, why do they believe in him? I mean, he's just a stupid guy. He's a black man in a white country coming out and telling all of these people where to head in. And everybody is in love with him. Now, why are they in love with him? They're in love with him because he believes in himself. He has a charisma that's as big as the whole world. And here in England, in Switzerland, and every country on earth, they all believe in him. And he's going around to all these people now, and he's saying to the president of France and the leaders of all the nations, as he goes to them, How can I help you? How can we in the United States help you to enjoy a more wonderful country, a more wonderful world? And how can you help us as we work together? And what happens? The need for war ceases to be. And the need for conflict ceases to be. It's fantastic. Now, this is part of values. Choma, yeah, mm-hmm. You Nigerians, you come to an abundant country, and then you earn 10 cents, and you send 8 cents home. Now, that 8 cents doesn't mean one cotton picking thing as you send it home, because all you're doing is making them thirsty for more. And you do not have the ability to send them more. You haven't trained yourself. So if you would take the 10 cents that you earn and apply it to your education, apply it to your training to become the best in your field, then you can send thousands of dollars home when you have stepped into your role that you're preparing yourself for. If you do it too early, you got nothing. You have nothing at all. Now, I have a young man. He's 23, and he has been trained by his parents to be exquisite in everything, especially sports. And so, right now, he has a tremendous job. He is the top ski instructor at San Moritz, I believe it, or San, whatever it is, in Switzerland, you know, up in the, the names are just slipping me at the moment, but in this grand hotel, big, beautiful hotel, and he does it. Now, because his parents did not teach him the value of money, he immediately is spending everything he's getting. He's getting all beautiful clothing. He's getting the latest iPod, the iPhones, the computers and all these things. And he doesn't need it because he has nothing to apply it to. But he's getting it because he can afford it now. If his parents would teach him like the Rockefellers had taught their children back in the early days, we give you 10 cents, you know, as an allowance, and you take 5 cents of that and you invest it in the bank. You invest it in stocks and bonds. And all the Rockefeller children did that, and by the time they were 21, all the Rockefeller children, from pennies, they became as wealthy as their father was. Fantastic. But they learned values. Now, if we can teach our nation values, in the United States, our friend Obama is taking money from the United States and giving it to all the people of the United States, all of them fairly. And he's helping his own people, as his understanding is. That's his values. His values are something so precious that when we wake up to see what he's really doing, we'll say, my goodness, if we could be raised like that. And yet, he came from a broken home. His mother and father were not together. He came from a family that was living here and there and everywhere. They were living in Hawaii, and his father went to Kenya, and his mother married again and lived in Hawaii and what have you. And he came to the United States, and of course he was a citizen, so he could qualify for being president. He could qualify for running for these different offices, and he did. And he proved himself on every level. He stood up. I would say, I don't think, and I imagine if we could research this, we'd find that out. I don't think he played with all the other children in his neighborhood. I don't think his mother let him go around with children who didn't have the same ideals that she had for her children, you know? And what happened? He became, at that young age, with all that magic that he has, the president of the United States. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, where are you standing? Where are you standing? What is your values? What are your morals? What is your desire for yourself? Do you stand? Can you say, no, in our family we don't do that? of yourself or of your family. In our family, we don't do that. In our family, for instance, if you're a vegetarian, in our family, we don't eat meat. Whether the children want it or not, they don't get it. They're not raised on meat. They're raised on vegetarian foods, and they're perfectly happy. They don't know the difference. Now, when your children are raised on good language and good phrases, good words, and values, that's the way they live. When your children are told, okay, you can go and play for a half an hour after school with your friends, and then you come in and you do your homework. No, nobody else has to do it. Hey, I didn't say this was something that we can argue about. This is the fact. This is what you do. Yes, this is what you do. You come in and do your homework, you know. And there's no discussion. There's no discussion. Or you come in and you practice the piano or whatever else it is that we have programmed for you to do. And when you do that, that's fine. And then, as soon as you're done with that, that means it's about 20 minutes to 6, and dinner is going to be on the table at 6. So, at 20 minutes to 6, you stop with whatever you're doing, and you set the table. And you prepare the table for dinner. And maybe you and your brothers and sisters each have a chore like that to do. There's no discussion. You do it. It's not because mommy works so hard and she needs your help. It's because you're part of this family, and that's part of the role you play. And because you love your family and you want to have everything in the family be as beautiful as you can have it be. And then to the daughter, you might say, now, sweetheart, your duty for dinner every night, and when you're home for lunch or breakfast, your duty is to somewhere in the garden or someplace, find one flower to put on the table. One beautiful flower from our garden or maybe from the florist. It doesn't matter. But it's your responsibility to have one flower on the table at every meal. Now, what's going to happen? They're going to delight in that. This is their responsibility. On campus, we have a number of people, and one of the persons is this 84-year-old lady, and I said, one of your duties is to have a flower on the table at every meal. Yes. And so, what happens? She goes out, and she puts a flower on the table at every meal. And, you know, she's so proud of it. She's so proud of the selection she makes. She thinks, where might the flowers be? Where might a flower be that'll be just the perfect one? And then she looks out the kitchen window after she's picked another one. Oh, there it was, right in front of her eyes. And she learns to find it. But you know what that happens to her? She is contributing to the family. She is not out of business. She's contributing. No, he's fine. He's fine. He's contributing to the family, and she's contributing to the happiness of the family and the playing of the family, and it's a wonderful thing. And this is really what we want to do. We want to develop in ourselves a recognition of the values and how to implement the values so that our whole family does it. Now, the dog whisperer in one house, the dogs would always jump at the table and beg and want something to eat, you know. And so the family liked it, but they didn't like it because the dogs were just too tough. And so he said, all right, here's what we do. So he went in there and he claimed the house, the dog whisperer. And then he said to the dogs, here is a circle. You don't cross that line. That line might have been at the door, you know. They can go to the door and watch, but they can't come in. And so at mealtime, the dogs would sit there and watch. They weren't really hungry. They're so used to begging because that they were getting all strokes and so forth while they're begging, you know. And they didn't really need to do it. But the people loved to have them do it because it gave the people the feeling that they were being great, you know, and they were being so generous by giving treats to the dog. And it's not so. So it's the people that are getting all of this activity and this attention, and it's not really what they wanted. And this is the important thing for all of us, too, is just to quietly, gently respond to life and see it all in peace. Now, bye. Ibube. Ibube. It's time to relax a little bit. You understand? Because if you don't want to relax, what we'll do is we'll draw a line there, and you'll be outside the line. You don't want to be outside the line, do you? No. Oh, you're going to be outside the line. Okay, outside the line. And very good. Very good. But you see, are you ready? Are you ready to begin working on your values from a new point of view? The point of view I'm giving you is kind of strange, you know. You think Princess Di, and you think Prince Charles, that's the name, right? And how Prince Charles was such a jerk, you know, in handling the relationship between himself and his wife. He doesn't dare do that. The prince doesn't dare be unkind to his princess. He doesn't dare, because he has a role. He's a role model. He should be the ideal marriage for the people of England. He should be the ideal representation of what the perfect marriage is. And if he has to make it so, he does it. And his wife, knowing she's marrying a prince, she's not marrying a commoner. She's not marrying somebody that they can get a divorce 10 minutes after they get married, you know. It's very special. You see, those values, we should take them upon ourselves. Which they didn't. But we should take them upon ourselves. And if we do, what's going to happen to us? If we take them upon ourselves, then wonderful things are going to happen to us. And we're going to feel very, very happy and very content and very fulfilled. And really, that's what life is all about. We want all of these things to be taking place in our world. And they take place in our world when we determine these are values that are important for us. As I go around the world and I talk about Princess Di, I talk about the Queen Elizabeth, I talk about the royal family. And I say, the royal family has gone out of style a long time ago. And even people who are in the royal family and who think that they are being royal are not being royal. They are being common. They are being common by allowing themselves to associate with the common people. Well, how do they know what the people want and what the people are? They don't care what the people want or what the people are. They only care what are the ideal values upon which you base your life. And then they are the role model of ideal values upon which you base your life. And if they can be ideal role model, wow! What a blessing to them, and what a blessing to their kingdom and to their people. But it's tough. It's tough. Now, Chrissy here, she works at the hospital, and she's a nurse, and she's got a responsibility with people working with her. And if she is not a good role model, if she leaves earlier, comes late, or if she goes into a patient and says, I don't have time for you, you know, if she acts disrespectful to her role and her work, what are her staff going to do? They're going to do exactly the same thing and worse. And if you have any of your staff that are not very courteous to their patients and to the staff and to everybody else, that's because you are not a good role model. Did you see The Sound of Music with Julie Andrews, you know? And what did the Mother Superior do in there? She was not a mean old character. She was a strong, beautiful person. And the song singing, How You Catch a Moonbeam in Your Hand, that's a lovely thing, but how do you? The Mother Superior recognized that that's what the commoner did. That's what the nun who had not yet achieved the high level of spiritual consciousness might do. But the thing is, can you be responsible yourself? Can you have the dignity that that girl had? Sure, it's a fictional story. It's true to a degree, but it's fiction. And in it, she was an ideal person. She did not foul up his marriage. She did not foul him up, the captain, you know. She did not do any. She was ideal. And she took those children. And she didn't tattle on the children and say, they put a frog in my back. She didn't say all this. And she could have. The other nannies did. They weren't there too long. But the thing is, she said, hey, these are kids. They don't hate me. They don't know me. You know? And her personal integrity, her personal sense of self-worth was so beautiful that no one could walk on it because she knew. She doubted whether she was good enough to do many of the wonderful things she wanted to do, but she knew what she wanted to do with those kids. And she took their clothes off and she put play clothes on them so that they could go and have a good time made out of the drapes of her bedroom. And it's cool. It's really magnificent. But there you see a truly princess royally type person. And she came out of being a farm girl and a nun, sort of. She was a novitiate, of course, and working on into things. But glorious. Do we respect it? Do we respect the Mother Superior for how she handled it? Yes. Did we say, gee, if my mom had been so cool, you know, if my mom had been so understanding, you know. But our mothers never can be like that because we do not have the vision to see that. But once we recognize the Princess Di activity, or we recognize that we are royal beings, we are divine beings, and we must act at all times like divine beings, and we don't, you don't let him associate with the neighbor kids who do dirty things. If they throw stones and if they talk bad about each other, you don't let them. But you gotta be even more strong. You gotta make sure he associates only with people who are gonna be uplifting of who he is. Because that's who you really are, you know, that's what you really want. And man, boy, that is a real challenge to us because we have been given freedom to do that. Now, when you guys were kids, what did you do as kids? Did you run around and do naughty things? Or did you do pretty good things most of the time? Well, most of the time you did pretty good things. But you did pretty good things because your mother expected that out of you. And my dad always said, I don't care if the rest of the world's going to hell, you're not going to. You know, you're going to do what is right, and you're going to behave. And that's why I'm so good. No, that's why we have been raised on the values of our parents. And you can tell. You can tell. Now, I sort of made a joke about it when I said that he said, what's next after bliss? You know, but that's not a joke. If you train yourself to live liking yourself, liking who you are, not any concern about anybody else, liking who you are, you train yourself to respect yourself, to see yourself as divine. You train yourself to see yourself super, super califragilisticexpialidocious. You see yourself so fantastic. Then, Chrissy, what happens? You see in everyone who you are, right? They're your reflection, right? And if you see somebody who's not nice, that's your reflection. But you see, when you are good in yourself, you cannot see out of yourself anybody who is not good. Everyone that you see is good and very good. And this is what we want to train ourselves. These are the values that we want to put in motion for ourselves. These are the points of view we want for ourselves that are going to allow us to be the divine beings that we are. We say, well, if I'm a divine being, why do I act dumb sometimes? And why do I do stupid things sometimes? Because we are allowing ourselves not to act divine. And, hey, you know, we say about the Bible, we say about Peter, you know. Jesus said, this is my rock upon I'll build a church or something like that. You know? And what did he do? Peter denied Jesus. You know, denied him. I don't know that guy. don't kill me. I don't know that guy. You know. And he didn't stand up at all. And yet, what happened? He carried on the teaching. We don't know. Now, sure, he fell down at an important moment, but did that moment matter? No. What mattered was he got up. What mattered was he got up and he became the beautiful sharer of what he understood. Oh, he was a pissy-ass character, you know. Because Peter, when who came along? Saul, who became Paul, who tried to crucify Jesus, remember him? Saul was working for the Roman government, trying to crucify Jesus. He didn't succeed. He was not there at the moment. But he tried to. He had this vision on the road to Damascus, and the vision was that, hey, Jesus said, why do you persecute me? You know, I love you. And so he started teaching what he understood about Jesus, which he understood only from inside, because he never met Jesus. He never talked to him, never heard a thing he said. But he listened to his heart. And then he came to Peter and he said, Pete, I'm with you. And Peter said, no, you're not. He said, you can have that side of the street, I'll have this side of the street. I want nothing to do with you. You tried to crucify Jesus. See, Peter couldn't forgive. I mean, here he is, the founder and founding Christianity, and he couldn't forgive. It's tough. It's tough. Peter did a lot of good and wonderful things, but he had the same problems that we have. And he even knew the principle more strongly than we have. But my goodness, we have such a privilege living in our world, living in the psychology of today, living with a dog whisperer who offers us the wisdom to see how dogs can be trained lovingly and gently. The dog bit the dog whisperer, and the woman said, oh, are you hurt? She said, no, just wipe the blood off. And then he continued what he was doing, because he continued gentling the dog, laying the dog down, and then the dog, okay, became docile. And when the dog became docile, it never bit anybody again. But if he had let the dog go after he bit him, then he would have had to go through the whole thing over, you know? But he continued with his training, and he continued bringing the dog into balance, and then the dog was in balance, and it all worked out. Now, this is what you are. You have within you the greatest Bible that ever could be written. The Bible of the divine in you. And as you listen to this inside you and follow it, what wonderful things happen. What wonderful things take place. Now, just imagine for a second if Harry and Will were trained as princes and kept in their own backyard, kept separate from all the people, kept separate from all the news, kept separate from all everything that's going on. Life was just a beautiful vision for them. And then it came time for one of them to be the king. And here they were, their idealist. Here they were, the idealist, not knowing about war, not knowing about... Do you know the story of the Buddha? Siddhartha, remember? He didn't, his father wouldn't let him know anyone ever died or anyone was ever ill or there were any poor people or people were ever hurt in any way. And so when he found out about it, he had to find out what's going on. And then what happened? He found out about it. And he went into his meditation and he found out that the bliss was within him. And he no longer had any desire to be a part of the world. He was in the world, but not of the world. He was in the world, living there, and people came to him and said, hey, you're a pretty cool guy, you know? We want to be like you. Wouldn't it be something if the British nation were to turn to any young princeling and say, hey, we want to be like you? And he said, well, I'm an idealist. Well, that's what we want to be. An idealist. Do you know what made the British nation great? What made the British nation great was that it was an idealist nation. It went around the world trying to do good, trying to take these underprivileged countries of the world and give them values, give them direction, give them goals. Oh, of course they tried to take care of their own economics program out of it, but they wanted to do nice things for these people. And they did. And then what happened? Then they stopped doing nice things. And then the world just didn't understand that. When they gave away all their colonies and territories and things like that, what they were doing was they were giving up being the idealist. They were giving up being the ideal picture or pattern for people to follow their lives on. And it's too bad. It's too bad. Because we sometimes think that that's what our reality is, and it's not. Our reality is that we are divine. Our reality is that we are good and very good. Our reality is that everything in this universe is ours to play with and enjoy. And it's not a matter that we own anything. We don't need to possess anything, whether it's a husband, a wife, or a child, or country, or world. We don't possess anything. It's all ours. And so, what do? We love it. What does the father do with a child? He raises the child so that the child can go off on its own, so it can be free and go out and be itself. The father doesn't raise the child so the child will always remain at home. Oh, some farming-type families attempt to keep their kids on the farm so that they can inherit the farm and carry on the farming business, but they don't want to. There's somehow a different set of genes that are activating in there and going forth in there. And we don't realize it. We don't realize it. What is it you want to be? What is it you want to do with your life? Do you think that loving yourself is going to help you? Do you think that respecting yourself is going to help you? Do you think that thinking yourself is the role model for the world? It's just a matter of, if Chioma here, we're going around like a role model for... Huh? Just imagine. Just imagine if this creature went around being the role model for the purity of mathematics in the universe. What would happen? What is it that keeps the universe together as a unity? Two things. Mathematics and music. Mathematics is the cement, music is the life of all activity. And really, if we could begin to come and understand that, we'd become aware of some very beautiful features, some very beautiful aspect of who and what we are. But we don't. Ellen's granddaughter, she's 18, I think it is, and she is a top tennis star. She wins every game. She is a beautiful girl, just gorgeous. She has good manners. She is linguistic. She speaks several languages quite nicely. She does a number of things. She loves children. And her little sister, who now is 11 years old and she's 18, she has been teaching her sister all along in schoolwork and helping her little sister, not doing it for her, but teaching her little sister to have pride and confidence in herself. And now all of a sudden, she wants to become a mathematician. She wants to become a math. She says, I love math. And she gets top grades in every course that she takes, and of course in math too. But she wants to become a mathematician. And I said, well, how does that fit being a mathematician and teaching young children? She said, I don't know, but I'm going to become a mathematician. It'll all fall into place, you know, in whatever way that it's supposed to, it'll fall into place, but I am going to follow my desire to be a mathematician. And, well, what about your desire to teach children? Well, I'll do that too. I'll do that too. It's just like Chioma here. Chioma was a banker, raising her son herself, and she was successful, but bored, because the banking business just did not challenge all of her talents. And so she said, I'm going to become a teacher, and I'm going to teach mathematics. So what does she do? She takes her courses in becoming a teacher, passes everything in no time at all, and now she's a teacher. Well, now, that's good. But then she says she wants to really start applying mathematics. She wants to get into the quantum theories of mathematics as they speak to the universal action of life, and they speak to how the world is blended together by the magic of mathematics. And she wants to go and learn all about this, and she wants to inculcate this into her brain, which is already there, but she wants to learn how to release it. And what does she do? She takes the courses and successfully handles them, and away she goes. What about you? Do you do that too? Yes, you do. You do that too. Now, are you always going to do that? Or are you going to do that only while you're young and beautiful as you are? Or when you get older, you're going to not no longer be the role model? Always the role model. Always. And Chioma, always the role model. And Ibube, always the role model. When Ibube is in school, all the other children want to do just like he does. Not because he's a naughty boy, not because he's creative and imaginative, which is what he is, but because he's a leader. He is a natural born leader of himself and children and life and everything. He can entertain himself, he can be totally happy by himself, and he can be totally happy with others. He is just a well-balanced, well-created child. Now, if she, for some reason, were to allow him to associate in circumstances that would unbalance him, she'd be hindering. He could never be unbalanced. But she could hinder the simplicity of his movement doing what he's doing. Now, just imagine if Obama's mother had said to him, well, now, you should be president, you should be president, you should be president. What would happen? Ugh. He would never be interested in it. But because he involved himself in the politics of life so completely and so beautifully and always helping the underdog, everything he did was to help those that were having a little more difficult time coming to terms with life. And naturally, his success was assured because that's the man he was. Now, is he unique? Is he something that's so special that we can't even begin to be like that? No, not at all. He's not unique and he's not special, but what he is, he's himself. He has the charisma that shines out of his inner self. Like you have the charisma that shines out of your inner self, which is your divine nature. And you say, I said that? I thought that? Yeah. A lot of times we amaze ourselves with what we think and what we say and what we do, because it is just so exciting and so beautiful. It's a dynamic and a fantastic experience that we go through. Yes. We'll take a pause now. We have been sharing for an hour, and then we'll go on with some more sharing. So.